You're listening to Sounds Good on WKMS. It's our midday music and community conversation program. I'm Tracy Ross. I'm here with Kate Lochte and Renaissance man Kim Trevathan. Welcome to Sounds Good.
That's kind of a good description, isn't it, Kim?
The best I could think of.
Yeah.
I appreciate that. Thanks.
Kim Trevathan lives in what I'm known to call Merville, Tennessee, but do you call it Maryville?
Somewhere in between Maryville and Merville, which is how the locals say it. We usually say Maryville College or Maryville College,
yeah.
So it's kind of in between there.
Up in the mountains, you teach creative writing, journalism, and literature. You're a Murray native. You're the author of the books Paddling the Tennessee River, A Voyage on Easy Water, Cold-Hearted River, A Canoe Odyssey Down the Cumberland, and most recently, Liminal Zones, where lake ends and rivers begin. And we've talked about your books on Sounds Good before. The Murray Environmental Student Society and the Great Rivers Group of the Sierra Club commemorates the 50th anniversary of the Wilderness Act this year, tonight, with a presentation that you're going to be making at 6:30 in a pretty fancy room. It's 1212 Jones Hall in the Chemistry Building. It's very new at Murray State off 16th Street. I think you have to park in back of it. But anyway, everybody's welcome. You don't have to be a member of either of those groups. So you write in Liminal Zones that you're interested in documenting the visible differences between still water and moving water and how each affects us differently. I think that's hard for those of us who are non-water people to really understand. And I wondered if you'd start off by describing your arriving at a place like that and be specific about it.
Okay, sure. I started doing this after my dog Jasper died. And Jasper went all the way down the Tennessee River with me for the material for the first book. And I got a kayak, and I started going upstream on creeks, et cetera. And one of the things that I began to discover almost by accident is that going upstream away from the upstream side of a dam on a lake, you could get to a point where everything changed, and usually it was that point where you could start to sense the river coming in. And one of the first places that kind of blew me away was on Fontana Lake, where the Nantahala River came in. And I was going, it was one of the hottest days of that year in a drought year. I think it was 2006. And I came to this place where, of course, the body of water narrowed, and there was this solid bank of fog that I was not sure I really wanted to go into, because I didn't know if I would emerge from it, or you know, and the whole atmosphere changed, and of course I did emerge, and I paddled as far as I could up the Nantahala before the current kind of threw me back, and on the way back the water, of course, was clarified, and the sun kind of struck the water in a certain way that I could see below the surface, and I saw all these shoes down there where people had
shoes.
You know, people raft on the Nantahala, and I guess when they fall out, they lose their shoes, and they gradually are swept down to that point. And all these carp, or at least a species of carp, which were illuminated by the sun in this suddenly clarified water. And it was so different from the lake that I'd started out on that it was just kind of revelatory, and it made me think, well, you know, in this case, it seems like the purity of that river environment versus the artificiality of the lake was something to comment on, and it was remarkable at that place. And from then on, I started looking for other places like that.
Tell another place.
Another place, closer to home, on Hematite Lake, and this is a very different dam, not a high dam like Fontana, which is on the Little Tennessee River system. In between the lakes, there's a small lake called Hematite, which has a little spillway dam. And sort of late in the research on the book for Liminal Zones, I got on Hematite, which is basically where my dad taught me how to fish. There's a little spillway below it, and it's Long Creek that feeds Hematite. So it wasn't a long trip up to the source of Hematite, but it's just as remarkable. You go from a really shallow, sort of weed-clogged lake up to a point where this little creek comes in. You got to go under a bridge. There's all these beaver dams up there, and the diversity of the wildlife and the, just the aesthetic interest seems to me to increase when you go from the lakes to the places where the feeder streams come in. And there's I don't have scientific backing for that, and it's not a it's not any based on any kind of research, but it's more of a I guess my impressions and sort of a I'm bringing a sort of an aesthetic kind of sensibility to landscape, I guess, more than anything else.
I'm thinking that I read one of the reviewers' consideration of the style of your writings, where not only do we get the practical aspects of just what it is you're packing or you've forgotten to pack that you rue not having with you, or something like the paddle you lost and you nearly lost your life because of it and how dangerous that situation was. And then there is the nature writer, reflector person who is thinking bigger thoughts about what's going on when you're out there. And I think it's that persona that you'll be taking tonight in asking the group to think with you about what we preserve versus what we don't. And I'd like you to give a couple of examples, stark contrasts that you might be mentioning tonight, just as a preview. Don't tell everything.
Sure, sure. Yeah, I should first say that, yeah, you mentioned the near drowning on the Rogue River, that I'm definitely not an expert paddler, kayaker, or canoeist.
But boy, you're smart about getting out of bad situations.
Lucky, usually. And of course, getting into bad situations creates good material, you know, to write about if you survive. But yeah, the paddling's really a writing tool for me, and going to these places. I mean, it fuels my writing, and I guess one place that I explored lately, actually about this time of year last year, and this is not in the current book, but I thought I would paddle Clark's River, and lots of people know about Clark's
River.
Did they
shake their head at
yeah,
you? Just like
I got a lot of discouragement about it, and I thought, come on, it's a 68-mile river. I've done 2 700-mile rivers. This can't be so bad. So my sister dropped me off at Tobacco. I don't know how many listeners are familiar with this place, but it's up near Midway in the southern part of the county, and it's not the exact headwaters of Clark's River, but it's close enough. There wasn't much water there, and I was planning on trying to make it to Almo the first day. Well,
excuse me.
It didn't work out that way, and there is so much deadfall on that river. I called my brother. I made it to the 121 bridge the first day, and I called my brother up, and I said, Steve, this is the hardest day of paddling I've ever had. I mean, I had to climb through this jigsaw puzzle of deadfall about every, you know, 20 yards or so, and I think, you know, the big ice storm, was that 2011? 2009, that's right.
Although we had a nice little one this spring,
right,
as well.
Yeah, you guys got hit with a lot of stuff. We didn't get hit in East Tennessee, but that was a sort of example. It's not wilderness in any strict definition of the term, and it was a river I grew up on. You know, I was so familiar with this place, and I was most of the time I was within a few miles outside the city limits of the town I grew up in, and it was just treating me like I was out in the middle of nowhere. And it really is a wild place. I've got a shot of a beaver I saw near Almo. That's one of the biggest ones I've ever seen. He was like 15 minutes away, and I had the NPR on. The financial news was on, and he was unfazed by it. So I guess, you know, Wilderness Act is very important, very vital to us all as humans, I think. But I think sometimes we look for wilderness in places where you don't have to go so far afield to look for it. And I think Clark's River is a great example of that, and a great example of a place that should be protected and preserved as much as we can.
So you are going to be doing a slideshow this evening, or a video presentation of some sort?
Yeah, I got a slideshow, and maybe a short video, just about 3 minutes of video. I think that helps if you get some audio going too, concerning some of these places I'll talk about.
Will your books be available there?
Yes, yes.
Good deal, good deal. We're talking with Kim Trevathan about his works in literature and on the nation's waterways. Sounds like you have a pretty cool life, all in all. Would you assess it that way?
Yeah, life is good. Yeah, yeah. I love what I do. I teach at Maryville College, and I have a nature writing course that I teach there at J-Term that I'll be talking about a little bit tonight. Take the students to some cool places up there in East Tennessee, and so I'll talk about that in terms of transformative places as well.
Excellent. Again, tonight at 6:30 in 1212 Jones Hall, which is the chemistry building at Murray State, everyone's welcome for the presentation that Kim Trevathan is going to be doing, hosted by the Murray Environmental Student Society and the Great Rivers Group of the Sierra Club. Thanks for being here today, Kim.
Thanks for having me, Kate.